This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Joining us in studio today, Todd Fleming. He's the president of the Hawaii Association for College Admission Counseling, and he's also the director of the counseling program at Iolani School. Amanda Patterson is the assistant athletic director of compliance and eligibility at the University of Hawaii. And Ryan Yamaguchi is the associate director of admissions at UH Manoa. And joining us by phone is Eileen Fia, a college counselor from Campbell High School and past president of the Hawaii Association of College Admission. Welcome to you all.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, we really appreciate you carving time out with us. You know, Todd, why don't we start with you? Help us process this. I mean, I'm just kind of curious, maybe going around the table, you know, what was your reaction when you first heard about this?
I think it's telling that a lot of people, when they first heard the news of the scandal, were shocked at the severity and the extent to which some of these families had gone. But we also weren't surprised in a way that this would happen, that the commoditization of college acceptance has become such a part of our society, that people are so focused on the end product of getting in, that in a way it's not surprising that people would take these extreme steps, that they would cheat to win in this way. Disappointing, to be sure, but in a way, sadly, not surprising.
And what about you, Matt? I mean, you know, we saw a lot of coaches that were indicted, who were in court. What was your immediate reaction?
I was shocked, disappointed, sad. It kind of took up my day, honestly, just reading through and, you know, trying to research. You know, it was, to say it's not surprising is you know, it's sad. But... You know, we learn from other people's mistakes, you know, and then I think that this is a time for everyone to try and get better, even though we might not be in that same situation.
What about you, Ryan?
Same thing, shocked. You know, we in the admissions profession, we take great pride in what we do. We look at the ethics of what we do, and we're proud of what we do, and we're happy at what we do. Helping the lives of all of these children who are applying, that's what we're here for. So something like this that happens, it was a shock to us. That.
And then what about you, Eileen? I mean, I know as a parent, I just felt like someone just punched my stomach. You know, I couldn't breathe. What was it like for you when you heard about this story?
Yes. It's funny you mentioned that, because for me, I was shocked and I was surprised. But I am also a parent of a student that is in college. And that was very disappointing for me to see that and experience that, especially as a parent, because we have a lot of faith in the educational system of our nation. And, you know, when we see something like that, it shakes us up a little bit, you know?
I was kind of surprised, too, with the whole athletics dimension, because, you know, I know when my kids were in high school, competing in sports, I just remember thinking, gosh, my son ran his heart out doing track. And you think of all the deserving athletes that maybe should have had a shot at one of these schools and maybe were denied space. I mean, I don't know. What do you think about that, Amanda?
Yeah, I mean, that could be true. Like I said, I mean, we don't have an athletics admits. You know, they'll go through the regular admissions process. What I imagine that these schools have is, you know, they've got, say, throwing out numbers 5 for football. You know, so it's possible that that's why we didn't see those types of sports. You know, maybe rowing or sailing. They may be higher achieving students. But yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. It could have taken away a spot from somebody else who was a true athlete.
I think one of the interesting pieces is that you reach these ultra-selective institutions. They certainly have limitations. They need to make sure that the students they're admitting are comparable to the non-athletes. And so you see cases where coaches will balance their rosters with that particular athletic talent of that student who may not have the same academic profile, but then they'll balance that by having a student who has very good athletics, but maybe an even higher academic profile. And particularly at the ultra-selective places, that's how coaches will balance their rosters. But there's also the reality that, as Ryan was saying, there's an ethics and trust in our profession that you know, the people thus far indicted in this, sadly, are coaches and parents. It's not admissions counselors, because when we in an admissions office, I used to work in an admissions office, would receive information from the coaches saying, here are our recruits. We took that information at good faith, that they were, in fact, the recruits that were going to help that particular team and that they were meeting the school's admissions requirements. It was our job to double check they were meeting the admissions requirements, but it was the coach's job to tell us that, yes, these are the athletes who are going to help us and help the team.
I guess I'm a little bewildered because you're thinking, gosh, if they were students that, you know, the high school didn't have a football team or, you know, you had situations where they photoshopped, went to that extreme, right? Photoshopped people's faces onto other athletes' bodies. I mean, it's just like, wow.
I think it's interesting. If you read the indictments from some of these cases, you'll find that some of the high school counselors are mentioned by the parents, by the primary defendant that, the counselor is asking questions, and that's the job of high school counselors, to advocate for students for sure, but to help them ask the right questions. And certainly a student who had never played a sport that the counselor knew of, that's part of our job, is to get to know our students. And it's fine that they may not play for the school, but we would want to know that they were being involved in a club sport, per se.
Right. So good for those college counselors who were quizzing, saying, something's not right with this picture.
We'd hope all would do that, certainly. And those who are members of HACAC, who are members of NACAC, you know, subscribe to ethical standards. So.
And so, Amanda, for families who don't really know the athletic, the programs and understand, like, what a walk-on is, because that's one of the things that was discussed at some of these schools where they were able to get in the back door. What does that mean when you're a walk-on?
If you're a walk-on, then you're just basically not on scholarship. So you'll be on roster, you'll practice, you'll get all the benefits, academic tutoring, all the rest of that. You're on roster, but you're just not on scholarship. So it's just basically a non-scholarship player.
And was there anything that you were struck by just, reading the indictments? I mean, I know the latest headlines is that the Department of Education is looking at a number of these schools to see if they violate any federal laws, you know, whether it's financial aid or anything else.
Sure, yeah. And, you know, the NCAA is also looking in to see if there are any NCAA violations. You know, whether they'll find them, I'm not sure, you know, because they weren't student athletes. They just had nothing to do with athletics. One thing that did strike me was the Yale athletic director now will look at all recruits and all names that are going to come through, which is an impossible job. But, you know, what has happened now has fallen on a lot of other people to do a lot more work.
I think it's unfortunate that when you think about what college admissions officers are doing in terms of the number of files that they're reviewing and the amount of time that they have to review an individual file, now this is another thing that's likely going to be added back onto their plate. It's not just enough now to take the coach with whom you work and likely have a trust relationship saying, this is my athlete. Some of these admissions officers now are going to have to look up that information themselves and try and be a sleuth to find out, is in fact this student who they say they are as a student athlete. And it's unfortunate that it's going to put that work, because the best work that a college admissions officer can do is really get to find out who a student is through their application. And if they have to spend more time searching through that to prove things instead of being able to trust that things are presented to them, then that takes away time from reviewing other applications.
And I would agree with that. That's what Todd was saying right there, because we look at it as a holistic point of what the student is doing, their academic performance, what they're doing outside of the academic classroom. What have they accomplished? By moving into this step, which many institutions may now take more scrutiny into athletes or even any other type of participation that the student has done, it just takes away that whole aspect of us trying to figure out, talking to the student, maybe talking with the high school counselor about the student. Now it takes a different angle on it. I would say that some institutions may start to take because of what has come from this.
And Aline, I don't know if there's anything you want to share. You know, I think the news broke before folks went on spring break. But what was kind of the reaction from some of the students maybe, you know, at your school?
I think there was a little bit of shock, not knowing what's going to happen. You know, how is this going to affect education as a whole and how it will affect future admissions, you know, in the college arena. in terms of being an athlete and in terms of being a student. However, our policy has always been to remind students and families, you are a student athlete. You take your academics and your athletics, and you do them both with integrity. And put yourself out to be the best student applicant with that, with integrity and with honesty and fairness of all you can be.
Was there any sense that you got from your students that this just isn't fair, that the privileged few can do this and they can buy their win through the side door? Were you hearing any of that?
Not, personally, not too much of that right now.
Okay.
Spring break.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And Todd, what about you? I know if you could take your hat off and put on your Iolani hat, you just came back from a college tour. What was the discussion like on that tour when you talked to them?
I think students, regardless of the school they go to, when they learn about the college admissions process, and part of a college counselor's job is teaching them about that, find out pretty quickly that it is not a meritocracy. We want it to be, but it's not. That every institution has institutional priorities, and that if they need an oboe for the orchestra that year, that person gets an advantage in the process. And we do a game that I know many school counselors do called the GPA game, because students tend to associate their GPA as the sole arbiter of what their success is going to be, or maybe put the test scores in there as well. But you have to recognize that there are these other factors. And so in this game, as different criteria are spelled out, the student moves up or down. They put the wrong name of the school in their college essay about why they wanted to attend the school. Well, that's going to hurt you in that admissions process. But you play the oboe, and the school really needs the oboe in the orchestra. And that moves up. And if your grandfather is the lead donor on the new campus expansion plan, that moves you up a long way as well. And that's probably the other part of this, is that these parents that we're talking about within this scandal are certainly people who've broken the law, if what they're accused of is true. But that every university, as part of its institutional priorities, may have people who have gained access in this way by a donation of a building or an endowed chair or something like that. And unfortunately, I think it's fair to say that economic status has impacted educational opportunity in the United States for a long time. And that's the extreme example of it. But it is one of the realities of the process. And so I think the focus always remains on helping students understand that the thing that they have control over is representing themselves in their application, making sure that it's their voice that comes through, and then recognizing that it is not a perfect process. A colleague of mine once said it's an imperfect process conducted in a perfectly human way. And that's what we want it to be. And when things like this happen, it's unfortunate that it takes away the integrity of that.
And I know for me, I was probably most shocked about the fact that there were some folks that took the test for the students. And I'd always held the ACT and the SAT process really up there. If you can talk about that maybe, from UH perspective.
We do use the test scores, and we do hold them in that high proximity as well with the College Board and the ACT. We expect that what they're doing is correct. We can't be at all of the high schools where the exam is being taken to make sure that proctors are doing what they need to do. So there is that trust factor that we have with those organizations that the scores are coming in. Also, with the volume, high volume of scores that we receive, it's something that's, we check the score, we verify what the student has achieved by getting official test scores. But to really dig down deep, there's really no mechanism for us to say, did that student really sit down in that exam and take the exam for that score? We're just taking the trust that that's what the College Board is doing, that's what ACT is doing, they're verifying that for us, and here is the actual score. And they have their means too, both College Board and ACT, that if there is something that's amiss about a score, they will let us and the institutions know that this score is invalid due to something. They won't disclose what it is, but they will let us know if it is scored as invalid.
Have we heard anything from the College Board? Are they going to tighten things up as a result of these indictments? Do we know?
They've been fairly quiet thus far. I think it's interesting. More than a few years ago, there was an incident out east where a number of students had basically, they were coming back from college to take exams for other students. It was their side gig, and they were taking the SAT. And after that, the College Board and Educational Testing Service instituted a much more rigorous ID photo check, so that the student, when they registered for the test, they had to upload a photo of themselves, and then that needed to be who it was that showed up on test day along with a valid photo ID. What's happened here is the exploitation came in terms of the test site proctors, and College Board Educational Testing Service and the ACT rely on high schools to proctor these exams for them. And so if there were opportunities where a proctor came in to do it, it was a handpicked proctor by the individual and things like that. And that's, again, yet one more place that could be exploited. And sadly was in this circumstance. And so it will be interesting to see if ACT and College Board respond in terms of additional patterns. But again, that will likely fall on these already taxed high school offices trying to administer these tests on exam day.
So tell us where we're at with the framework of applications. I don't know, when is the next test date? I imagine it's in the summer now.
Actually, we have a test date. Let's see. We are just past the SAT test date. We have an ACT coming up in April.
Oh, April.
Okay. We have an SAT coming up in May and another one in June. An ACT coming up in June. And these are the tests that the juniors are taking right now. So that they're going to be taking these exams through the spring of their junior year and then into the fall of their senior year as well.
Okay. So it'll be interesting to see what extra precautions are being taken, if any.
Yeah, and the test companies do send observers on to campuses unannounced to sort of make sure that procedures are being followed. But again, they can't be in every place at every time.
Okay. Anything else you folks want to share just about the process and, you know, the fact that we're waiting on those letters of acceptances from school?
Decisions are going out. You know, this is a great time for all of the students, exciting times when they're waiting to hear which institutions are they going to get into. It's also an anxious time for the institutions as well, which students are going to choose their institutions and where they're going to end up for the fall semester once it in a few months. It's only just right around the corner. So it is an exciting time, and this is more of what we want to focus on rather than all of this that we see in the news. Is more of the focus on, let's get these kids into that next step in their career and where they're going to be as they move on in a college career.
And it's really about what the best fit for your child.
That's the common refrain that any good college counselor practices, that idea of a fit. It's a hard thing to define, and particularly a difficult thing for a 16 or 17 year old who's known probably one or two educational environments for most of their life, maybe three if they were at an elementary and then a middle and then a high school. But we encourage them to learn about what these colleges have to offer. We're blessed in this country with an amazing array of universities of different types and sizes and opportunities. And so we really can help them understand which environments would be places where they will be challenged academically, because we want that. But we want them to be successful as well. We want them to be happy as individuals, and we want them to be in an environment that feels the right place for them. And so really focusing on that fit is something that just clearly never happened with this. These parents decided these particular schools were worthy of the brand name status without thinking about, is this the right environment for my student to thrive and grow as a student and a person?
And you mentioned earlier that I think as we speak, there may be some of these prestigious schools that are sending out the letters announcing.
Yeah, there's the vast majority of colleges have made most of their admissions decisions already. A number of the Ivy League schools and some ultra selective places are notifying today. They tend to notify at the end of their business day, which unfortunately for us here in Hawaii is lunchtime.
Right.
But yes, there will be a lot of students who will get news over the next day or two here from pretty much the last of the schools that they haven't heard from.
And Amanda, is there anything you can add just as far as the good fit, you know, between the student athlete and programs that they may be accepted into?
Yeah, sure. I think it's really important that student athletes, or if you're coming in to play a sport, that you are looking at a school that would be a fit as well. You know, you're looking at maybe a scholarship or a non-scholarship where the school might be a better, and it doesn't have much of a scholarship or a scholarship. You know, you gotta look at the totality. You know, is this a program that I want to get into? Is this a school that I'll thrive in? Am I better in a smaller setting rather than a a larger school, for sure. I think that that's key. It is the totality of it. They should be really taking a look at that.
And what about you, Eileen?
Yes. For many of my families and my parents and students, the other thing that really comes out is the financial fit. We take everything into account, what is best for the student and best for the family, but we also need to take into account what is the best financial fit as well. What can the family handle? What can the student bring in as far as their portion as well? Because when you build a list of colleges, and when you build, that's why you build a whole group of colleges in terms of where you want to apply and where can you really picture yourself. But to also be astute about looking at the finances too and the fit for your family and not putting yourself out too much, where then problems may arise, and those problems will be very real and very difficult to deal with down the road. So planning, making sure when you see, it's about, where will your child thrive, but also in the family sense, financially, where can you as a family support your child to thrive as well?
Do you have any meetings coming up with families of your potential graduates here in the next month or so, where maybe this whole Varsity Blues discussion will come up?
Are you talking to me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So, so in our organization, we do put out College Planning Night. And there are a listing of college planning nights that will be coming up. We also are talking about, I know we also do financial planning nights as well. We do them at our local libraries, and they will be coming up. And also in many of the public schools, including, the ones on the West and mine as well, we do college planning nights on our own, but we also have some coming up. Because it is a time for the juniors and the underclassmen to start really looking at their own building their own college list, and looking at, again, with their family, sitting down, what can they afford? Where do they want to go? Where do they dream about? Where can they see themselves at? So it's a really prime time. Like Ryan said, it's a really focusing on the future it's a great and exciting time. And yes, plans may change, things may change, but as long as you guys are together and your focus is clear, and you know what you can do and what you want, it'll be okay.
It is that busy time in the offices across the country, in college counseling offices, high school counseling offices, because you have juniors and their parents who are, as Eileen said, just really embarking on this process right now. But you have the seniors who are now processing the decisions. And so across the country, there will be those conversations where families come in and sit and talk, and it's challenging because the cost ends up being one of the biggest factors for most families when they are looking at education, the next step for their child. And those can be difficult conversations, but they have to be had, as Eileen said. It's better if they have those conversations earlier on about what is realistic for us. And the idea of having a financial solid is something that is just good practice. For a long time, college counselors have talked about having your solid schools, those places that you look at and feel like, yes, these are places that are where an application is going to be accepted. Your either ways or your possibles or targets, people use different terminology, and then your reach schools. And it's fine to have all of those things. You want all of those things. But the nuance that's been added in as college costs have outpaced inflation costs is that you now need financial solids. And maybe you have some financial reaches on your list that you might get in, but it just might not be tenable. But if you've got those financial solids on your list, then you're in a solid position.
Well, this is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. We're talking about college admissions given the federal indictments in Operation Varsity Blues. You can join the discussion, too, by calling 1-877-941-3689. Stay with us. We'll be right back after a break.
It's not a secret. Parenting is hard. But maybe we shouldn't put so much pressure on ourselves.
To get to good outcomes, sometimes you do better by not worrying about outcomes at all.
What it means to raise a human. This week on Hidden Brain from NPR. this evening at 7.
Ray Cruz, Hot Latin Beats.
Louise King Lanzalotti, Classical Pacific.
This is John Allen, host of B-Sides and Beyond and Blues from the Basement.
Charles Husson, Jazz.
Derek Malama, Hawaiian.
Ian Capps, The Early Muse.
DJ Mr. Nick, Whatever Serves the Moment.
These are just some of the local music hosts here at HPR 1 and HPR 2. They welcome your comments and suggestions and in turn play for you the music you love. Support this vibrant exchange with a donation today. HawaiiPublicRadio.org.
You are back with the conversation. I'd like to use this time now to segue into over-parenting. Let's have a conversation about that, have a discussion about that. Anything you folks want to throw on the table?
It's careful. It's a delicate topic, right? Because I think as many of us sitting around the table are parents, we want the best for our kids. That's natural. One thing that I think a fair exercise to do is to ask a parent to reflect on their own college application experience and how involved were your parents involved? How involved were they in that process? And things have certainly shifted to a far greater level of parent involvement than might be considered healthy. I think it's pretty interesting. The Harvard Graduate School of Education just released a report called Turning the Tide 2. And the original report a couple years ago implored universities to think more holistically about their process. Were they using test scores in the right way? Did they need to be using test scores? What sort of emphasis and what sort of messages were they sending? The second part of this report that just came out is basically encouraging parents to cultivate ethical character in the process, and doing so reduces some of the stress in this process for students, that ethically modeling the right behavior is a big part of this. And I think it's telling because we certainly see that, unfortunately, some parents focus on the, and students alike, achieving acceptance to a school as the end product. And it's really just the beginning of the process.
And Amanda, what have you seen? Have you seen helicopter parents, in athletics?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I've figured out what kind of parent I don't want to be.
okay. There you go.
Yeah. We meet with our student athletes every year before school starts. Something we have to do, and something that I point out is FERPA. FERPA is fantastic. Federal Education Right to Privacy Act. I cannot talk to parents about anything that goes on with their student. If they're paying their school, anything. I can't speak with parents, so I do outline that. If parents call in, I do tell them that I can't speak with them and to speak with their child. I think the thing with us is that we're trying to send them out to be an adult. We're kind of the second phase on that. You know, they've done it through high school, going into the second phase. You know, we're really teaching them how to live on their own and be productive citizens when they leave. So I will speak with parents, and I do tell the students that, but the students need to be in my office with me, and I don't hold anything back. I don't speak with parents very often.
And Ryan, what's been your experience?
Speaking with parents, yeah, we talked about a little bit before the break, and then now as well, the conversations that parents have with their students is something that they should do. They should talk about all of the things we're talking about: finances, best fit, where's the location, are you okay with that? Even if it's legacy, you know, I went to a certain school, it would be nice if you went to that school. But having that kind of open conversation with your student is something that needs to happen. Better than you as the parent just talking to us as the professionals, you should have that kind of conversation with your child as well throughout this process, starting from junior year, maybe even earlier, getting these things on the table so that it's not a shock where your child gets into a particular institution where they want to go, then all of a sudden you have to slap them with a financial, we can't afford that. you know, at least talk to them about it. So as they're going through that application process, they know what they need to get. They know what scholarships they need. They know financial aid level that they need to get. These kind of conversations, that's the parent involvement that we want. And of course, parents are great at keeping the kids in line of making sure that they do the next steps in order to enroll at the institution following the deadlines and so forth. That's help that we definitely, that we've seen the parents help tremendously in the student's application process, their decision-making process as well, is those that have a good conversation with their kids.
What about you, Eileen? Have you had much experience with helicopter parents at your school or as the past president of the association?
Yeah, so of course, I agree with everyone. You know, there needs to be that conversation between, between parent and child or a family as you're getting together. But this is also a time where you guys, where everyone can come together and actually form a close-knit bond of closer, you know. If they take the viewpoint of we're all in this together and working it on that way, you know, you can, as a parent, you can really have that opportunity to bond. And yes, there will be discussions. And yes, you know, there will be that parental instinct to take everything over and fix it because, you know, my child, you know, can't do it. Obviously, it seems like. And I'm just talking because, you know, as a parent, I have made those mistakes too. But, you know, taking a step back when that happens and understanding that exactly what they said, that, you know, your child is growing up, we're wanting them to go out and to become productive and responsible citizens. And, you know, this is a time where we can actually sit down together and plan. And it's a lot of emotion. It's a lot of emotions. So, you know, there has to be a lot of understanding on, you know, that everybody's, the emotion, this is a high, you know, one of the pivotal points of, you know, life-changing moments. So, you know, we have to understand that and have a little bit of patience all three ways. And what I mean by three ways is not just with parent or with the student, but we hope that the parents also or the families will become involved with the school as well. Because as counselors, our organization is there to help the family and help the child, to guide them, so that when these times happen, we're there for them too. You know, we're not there to just sit there and just, okay, whatever you want. We're there to give advice. In other words, advice not to, oh, well, go to this school or go to that school. But we're there to help you make informed decisions, to help guide you through this process that sometimes your emotions take over and it's like, well, I only want that school, you know?
Yeah.
I've seen that and I've heard, you know, and to really take a step back and all so that you can make the best informed decision everyone involved.
Thank you. We have a call coming in from Hawaii Kai. Claire? You're on the line.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I think it was Todd who spoke about the commoditization of college acceptance. And it really struck me when the scandal broke that we in Hawaii have, and throughout the United States, but in Hawaii especially, the commoditization of preschool acceptance and kindergarten acceptance.
Yes.
And junior high school acceptance. And that is, I mean, Hawaii is kind of special because we have more children per capita in private schools than anywhere else in the United States. So this, you know, right. With these families involved in the scandal, this didn't start with them in college. It started much earlier on. And we have our own ways of kind of where people can kind of maybe not trick the system, but game the system, right? Well, I'm gonna spend money sending my kid into a coaching program so that they can have that good preschool interview at Central Union so they can get into Punahou, right? And what is this whole idea? I think we need a challenge of what does the best for our children mean? And you know, this is personal to me. I have two kids in public high school here. Is it the best for them? I don't know. But that's not what I was looking for. I was looking for an experience where they would get hopefully a decent, well-rounded education and more importantly have exposure to kids from really different walks of life, including kids with special needs and special education. And so, you know, is it the most elite? Absolutely not. Are they going to be fine? Yes, they will be fine. And what we need to remember is that for most of our kids, unless you're coming from a really low income disadvantaged family, our kids are going to be fine regardless of where we go. So we need to really kind of, again, rethink this idea of what's the best. The best isn't always elite. And this pipeline, you know, this privileged pipeline, I think really needs to be challenged. And we as parents need to challenge that, and we as a society need to challenge that. And we need to have public schools that are just as good as the private schools, so that it isn't something that parents have to agonize about that choice over anyway.
Thank you, Claire. Thank you for that. I remember as a parent, I was thinking, well, gosh, do I want my child to go into a kind of a country club school? And I guess as a journalist, I thought, you know, I like real life. And my daughter happened to go to a school in Boston, and they were all caught up in the Boston bombing, you know, and one a student in her program was killed in that. And that's real life, you know. You can't protect your child, and the best you can do is, and hopefully you prepare them, and then you cut the cord, and then they can handle real life. You know, my son on his first day of college, I had dropped him off, and Monday morning I got online to see how things were, and at his school there was a freshman who was walking across campus to his first class, and somebody grabbed him and cut his throat. And it was very shocking to read that. I mean, he was fine, the student was fine, he didn't get the jugular, but it was just you have your firstborn or your kid goes off to college far away and you just hope for the best. But that was a real eye-opener for me as a parent, you know, knowing that you can't protect them, you can't be a helicopter parent, and you've got to let them go. And so I think it was a real growth experience for both my kids, seeing that dose of real life, this could happen. You know, fortunately, that college happened to be on top of it, and every day had an update on the progress of the child and, you know, the arrests that followed and all of that. So that was reassuring as a parent on this end. So one of the many things to worry about.
I think it really is a reflection of the fact that this college admissions process is the first step in that sort of new stage in this relationship between a parent and their child, that, you know, you can control for so much in terms of the environment that you put them in, the elementary school or the high school that you choose for them or things like that. But at some point, we lose control of that day-to-day experience. And the reality is we never totally have control of it, but it's more pronounced when that student is 3,000 miles away or 5,000 miles away. But that's all the more reason why it's so critical that students do feel empowered to take charge of this process. So many students want to do the thing that they feel is what their parent wants. They want to make their parents proud. They want to make their parents happy, which is wonderful. But we want them to make sure that the decisions they're making are the right decisions for them as young adults figuring out who they are. And that's a real challenge, but it is the task before us, and we're kind of on the front line in a lot of ways as they start to make those first steps.
We have a note here someone had emailed in. Susan writes that my girlfriend's son Lance is now a junior at Yale. When he was applying, his mom asked if he needed consultants. He said, pay them, I can do it myself. And he did and was accepted. And at the time she told me the story 3 years ago, I was curious why they weren't asking for help. But Lance was so confident, we all trusted him. His friend, however, from St. Barnard's School in New York City didn't fare so well. His mom's friend had a proxy take the ACT for her son, and then she sat down with him to take the test together at home so he wouldn't know. Away, the mom is being indicted. You know, and I just kind of wonder, too, just about the psychological effect of this on the child, you know, if he'd had his parent indicted and is caught up in this, you know, there's 50 people in this indictment, and maybe there's more, who knows?
That was one of the first things I thought of, was the students who thought that they had gained acceptance to a university on their merits, and now it's been revealed in court that their parents had somebody take the test for them or sort of grease the wheels in another way for them to gain acceptance. What does that do to that student's self-confidence going forward? And it's unfortunate. I believe it was Claire's comment, the vast majority of students they're fine. You know, whether they go to the most selective school or a large state university that accepts the majority of their applicants, if they take care of business on the academic front, they can be very successful in that way. But what do you do psychologically to a child when you're sending that message that it's not enough, that what they can obtain through their own hard work and their effort isn't enough to meet your standards as a parent? That's a real concern. And you hate to see it for the student, and you hate to see that the parent has let it get to that point in their own mind that this is so critical.
Do you think there'll be bullying, Amanda, you know, in these situations where these kids, let's say student athletes who were not athletes?
I've kind of already read that there has been, you know, and just how demoralizing and how embarrassing, and I mean, it just rips a family apart. You know, as Todd said, I mean, it's you think that you got into this school, but mom and dad have paid. I just can't imagine their psyche, and really how do you move on from that? I just feel really bad for a lot of the kids. You know, some knew, some didn't. You know, how do they move on?
Summer break could be interesting for some of these families.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And Ryan, what can you share? I mean, you know, you folks are college counselors, right? But at the same time, what counseling service do you think would you give to somebody that's maybe caught up in this?
So many of the universities also have programs and organizations on campus that can help students with. They can come in, discuss the issues that are going on, be able to voice their concerns, voice where they are, how they're feeling, confidentially, of course, and helpfully get them through the college career still yet. Because like Todd said, they might be fine. They might be good students at the institution, and we want to see them through all the way. But that was one of the fears that I had with these students who may not have known that this is what happened to them. Now they're in this institution. What does that happen to them as they walk around campus? Are they worried about other people looking at them, knowing who they are? Are they worried about being treated a little different possibly? And if so, most of the institutions have a student affairs or some type of programs that are available for them, counseling programs, where they can talk to confidentially again, to be able to get those emotions out, share it with somebody so that they can still continue on their college career and finish up school at those institutions.
As I was reading things online, I came across an article that talked about imposter syndrome.
Right, the idea that you're not worthy of a spot where you're at. Now, I would say, as I talk with my students, most students, regardless of the school, the college that they end up at, many times will feel that at some point where they'll say, wow, these people are so smart and I don't know if I belong here. But what I always tell them is there will be also days at this college where you say, I got this. This is just, I've got this. I can handle this. And some of the other kids in class on those days are like, wow, these people are so smart. I don't belong here. A college admissions office does not admit a student who cannot do the work at the institution. That is the mantra that comes from the director of admissions all the way down, that when you're building a class holistically, the most important characteristic is, can the student do the work here? And so I always stress that these students, a student who's been admitted or even a student who's been waitlisted at a college, that message is, you can do the work here. We know that. We recognize that. And it really, then the other factors start to come into play. Do we have enough spaces for all the students who can do the work here? At the most selective places, they don't. 80% of the applicants are able to do the work at the institution. But that's when all these other factors, the alumni legacy, the letter of recommendation, the essays, start to play different roles within that process.
We have a couple of calls. Wayne from Mililani, you're on the air.
Right. So one of the things that I think hasn't been really brought up through the entire case is that it's not just that there's a right way and a wrong way if you want to game the system to get your kid into college, but it's also that colleges aren't really viewed so much anymore as educational institutions, but as places where you can network with the kids who have rich parents. Or if you want to get a leg up on a particular industry, if you go to a certain school, it'll give you that leg up. I think there's been a lot of talk about all colleges being equal. You can go anywhere and get a good education, which I believe is true. But on the other hand, people tend to go to college now to network, to get a leg up, and to, and future employers see it as such. I mean, there's a reason why investment banks go to Harvard, go to Princeton, go to Yale to recruit for their to recruit for their banks and not, you know, community colleges. Anyway, I'll take my comment off the air.
Who wants to jump in on that one?
I think, you know, unquestionably one of the values, and colleges have always marketed this fact, is that you get this network to an alumni network that is empowering and that will create opportunities. I think to Wayne's point, there are two interesting notes on that. One is that network can be real. It can create job opportunities. It can create internship opportunities. And there is no doubt that certain places have advantages in that realm. We always say that that's also great for the first job. But if you don't deliver once you're there, then where you did your undergraduate starts to matter less if you don't deliver on the job. The other thing that's interesting, though, is if you look at I apologize for not having the exact statistic, but if you look at the CEOs of the Fortune 500 companies, it's not necessarily that the most elite schools are overrepresented there. And there's actually a great number of Fortune 500 CEOs who are not graduates of Ivy League or similar institutions. And so I think that's there are two sides to that coin for sure. And that network is a real thing, but it's one part, and it's got to be backed up by the student once they're actually in the job.
We have another call, Jesse from Eva Beach.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah. I called to say that I kind of went through something similar, this idea of the prestigious school versus the school I ended up in. I was, everybody, including me, was convinced I was going to Brandeis University on the East Coast. I ended up at Michigan State University instead, and to be very honest, I've never regretted my choice. I got to live in a new environment. I got to meet different people than the ones I'd grown up around, and I ended up with a great education and a very interesting and fulfilling career.
Good for you.
And I really feel that, you know, it needs to be a matter of the best fit. That's how I ended up where I was. Very simple thing. The Brandeis had this structure where you took all your liberal arts courses first and then you majored. And Michigan State worked both through parallel. You know, in other words, you started both at the same time in different classes. And I found that I preferred that environment. The idea of spending 2 years doing nothing but liberal arts and 2 years of doing nothing but chemistry was really repellent.
Well, I have to say, you know, I had a similar experience where I went to a small private college, and then a couple of years in, I switched to a state school, and I enjoyed the time at the state school. It was just such an eye-opener because of the diversity, you know, and it was in a city, and it was just a whole different, experience.
And it all comes back to fit. It's that idea that no one school can be the perfect fit for every student. And, you know, to Jesse's point about the idea of how her academic experience was structured, the idea of, you know, wanting to be able to do the major concurrently with the general ed requirements. For some students, something like the calendar makes a difference. Is it a school that's on a trimester system versus a semester system? The pace of life matters to them. And so those are all the types of factors that we talk about when we work with students in developing that list to help them understand. Again, back to that idea of how do you define fit? What is going to be the right step for the student?
We've got about 3 minutes left. Eileen, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, college, exactly, that's where you're going to go to make, you know, to explore and find and learn about yourself, because in the end, college is a learning institution. And education takes place not just within the class, but outside too. And when you're happy and you have the fit, and that's where you're going to go. You're going to go to college. Doesn't matter, you know, the name or whatever. What it is that's the college that fits you. And you're going to take advantage of the many opportunities that are there at every institution. And you're going to become someone that is going to, you know, grow and become the citizen and the productive and responsible citizen and human being that we all hope, as high school counselors, that we all hope that our kids will become.
Okay, about a minute left. Any final thoughts on behalf of UH?
I think basically it's all opportunity. College is like one of the previous callers mentioned, academically, we all have our grades. We all have our good things. But it's the opportunities that we provide. Colleges will provide opportunities. It's what the students will do with those opportunities. Todd talked about it a little bit. What are the students going to do with an option to network? What are they going to do with an opportunity to work in an internship? What are they going to do on campus just to become not only just sitting in the classroom, but I'm going to be involved with campus? So that I think is what universities are there for. That's why we're here, is to provide these opportunities for students and the students to take advantage of those opportunities, grasp them, help and build that into what they're going to live their lives as.
Okay. Anything?
Know that your kids are going to make mistakes and they learn from them and move on.
Okay. All right. We'd like to thank our guests, Ryan Yamaguchi, Amanda Patterson, Todd Fleming, and Eileen Fia. And we'd like to thank you, the listener, for joining us on today's show. If your call didn't make it on the air during today's discussion, you can still contact the TalkBack line and leave your comments. That number, 808-792-8217. You can also send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. And if you want to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.